Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thanks to the power of Zoom, I got to travel to Melbourne, Australia and talk with Cara Devine. She's got a YouTube channel called Behind the Bar and a book out, which we'll talk about, as well as having served in the Melbourne scene for several years, being a mentor, winning awards, just overall wonderfulness, and she's got the best laugh. Also, we kind of bonded on our clubby days, so lean back and have a listen to us reminiscing about booze and music.
I am Cara Devine. I am a bartender in Melbourne, Australia. So I manage a bar here, which is called Bomba, but I also have a YouTube channel called Behind the Bar with Cara Devine, and write for Australian Bartender, and also just released a cocktail book this year. So
I was going to say, multifaceted. Yes, you have a list of things behind you, like YouTube creator with like a very nice subscription count there. I saw the book. When did the book come out?
So that was October this year. Does that make sense? Maybe it was earlier than that. I'll fact check that for you. I had to get in the manuscript in March, and then they obviously took a few months to do their thing. It came out a little while ago, a few months ago now.
That is incredible. And then you are still all the thing that got you here. You are still bartending on top of it occasionally.
So a little bit less. Not quite the 50 plus hour grind anymore, which is good. Cause I did try and do both for a while and that almost killed me, but I've stepped back a little bit. But I do like to keep my hand in. So I still do a few shifts a week at Bomba, and then, the listeners won't be able to see this, but the reason that I'm in a very odd spot at the moment is we're actually opening a new venue, which I can't say too much about, but you heard it here first. I'm in the building site kitchen at the moment.
Oh, amazing. Well, at the end, we'll go over the socials and everything so that people can follow you and then be alerted to when this new venue is opening up. I wanted to ask, I read something about you because, I do my research, but I read something where I always ask, like, how did you get started in bartending? When did you first get into it? But I read a funny quote from you where you said something about being in hospitality from the time you were about 10 or something, that you had started very early working.
not quite 10. I think I was 16.
Okay, okay. Count, that's a little more reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. You know, unless you count making cups of tea for my mom and dad or whatever. But
some people do.
Yeah, 16. Yes, very true. 16, I started in my kind of local, what we call like a country club, which is probably a bit different than the US. It's not a golf course or anything attached mm-hmm. to it. It's just more like a gym and a swimming pool that has sort of a cafe and bistro there. So yeah, I felt at 16, my options were basically either, you know, waitressing or working in a supermarket. And I figured, well, if you work in the service industry, you get tips, hopefully. So that'll slightly augment my junior wage.
Yeah.
So that was really where that decision came from, and the rest is history.
And that was in Scotland, which is where you're from. Yes,
it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, a little kind of suburb outside of Glasgow called Newton Mearns. And that was definitely where I first got that real sense of, you know, camaraderie that only comes after doing mm-hmm. a crazy, you know, the first sunny Saturday of the year where everybody's out on the patio and you're just getting slammed for 10 hours straight. And then you turn around and you look at all the cutlery you have to do and take the bins out. And, you know, that's where that I think those team bonds really form, which is probably what got me hooked into the industry.
That's what I was going to say. Obviously, it, you know, it sounds like hell, but you enjoyed it. You enjoyed that camaraderie and you stuck with it. So when did the bartending side of it come into it for you?
So I did actually, so I went to university, but I worked at that same place in Glasgow all the way through there, but you know, more just as spending money for all the clubbing I was doing in those days.
That's fair.
And then once I graduated, my friends and I, we were 21 at that point. So we were like, we should do a trip around the States. So did quite a big road trip, sort of all down the East Coast, and then kind of flew across and did up the West Coast to San Francisco. And then one of my friends, yeah. And also I was definitely not meant to be the one that was driving, but through a series of unfortunate circumstances ended up being the one driving, which was quite a scary proposition with only one minor crash.
Oh gosh. So, that means you definitely needed a drink at the end of just about every day.
Yes, definitely. But yeah, then we flew actually up and did a working holiday visa in Canada. So I was in Vancouver for a year, and that was really where I first saw, you know, with no disrespect to the place that I was working previously, but you know, that sort of higher level of hospitality mm-hmm. and that sort of craft cocktail scene. So I was just kind of wandering around handing in resumes. You know, at that point thought I was pretty qualified because I'd been waitressing for a while. But then wandered into like Whorehouse, which is in Gastown in Vancouver, which is still going strong as far as I'm aware, but that was that you know, very kind of like pre-prohibition, quite serious cocktail bar, Negronis, Manhattans and whatever. So you know, I was like, oh, I reckon I'd be a pretty good addition to your team, like sub me in, coach. And the manager was sort of like you know, we'll start you out as a host. And so, yeah, I just sort of did which is not really a position in the UK at all. But obviously, again, in North America is quite a big thing. So that's sort of what I did. So I never got behind the bar or anything at that point. But I did, for my little post at the door, get to see the bartenders working. And that was just the first time that I'd seen that sort of knowledge and skill level and that thing where people would sort of come in and maybe be a bit grumpy with me on the door or whatever, because they'd had a bad day. And then by the time they were leaving, couple of cocktails and a lot of good chat from the bartenders, you could tell that their day had really been turned around, and I just found that quite magical. So I decided that was something that I wanted to do. So when I went back to Glasgow, I kind of looked for somewhere that was doing more of that style of bartending mm-hmm. and ended up at the Blythewood Square Hotel, which is like a 5-star hotel, which I think at that point had just won, you know, Cocktailist of the Year in some awards or something. Because again, it was that very, you know, a lot of Amaro that, you know, at mm-hmm. that point, trying to explain to your average Glaswegian on the street what Amaro was,
yeah.
You know, definitely a bit tricky.
It was a hard sell, right?
But yeah, learned lots there and worked a couple of other places in Glasgow, just sort of trying to build up my skill set before moving over to Melbourne, which would have been 9 years ago now. And really, really coming here for the kind of incredible bar scene that it has. And so, yeah, that's really where the majority of my career has been.
it's interesting for me. I've been to Melbourne a couple of times, not for a while, but the first time I was there, that culinary and cocktail scene was just kind of kicking in. Excuse me. And I lived in the Bay Area at the time. And it reminded me a lot of what was happening in the Bay Area too. So I've seen how that changed. So when you landed, what happened? How did that work out for you?
Pretty good. I ended up working in my first job here was in a place called Lily Black's, which had it is always funny in Australia because they always like to have, you know, the largest whatever in the southern hemisphere. Because there's actually not that many. So we had the largest bitters collection in the southern hemisphere. Because I guess there's not as much competition when you look at it that way rather than the whole world. But that was really fun. That was quite a late night. You know, we're open till 3 every night. So we got a lot of possible, you know, more like restaurant workers and chefs and stuff coming through there for their knockoffs and things. So got pretty kind of into the scene here in that way. That's met nice. A lot of good people.
You get the industry
very,
as well.
Very
as
warm
the
and welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, if you do a working holiday visa in Australia, basically one way of trying to make sure that what I have done and where I just stay and stay and stay doesn't happen is that they actually make you only work in one place for 6 months at a time so that you can't really put down roots unless someone within that 6 months is willing to sort of say, you're worth putting in the time and effort to sponsor. So yeah, 6 months there, then I had to do my farm work, which again is this crazy thing where they just take, you know, city people like me and stick them on a farm because they
really?
Need people to work on the farms here.
Wow, yes, I had no to do, idea yeah.
that was a thing.
I'm very intrigued now.
Second year.
I love Australia. I'm very intrigued. I didn't know they did that. And I'm like, you know, my grandfather had a farm. So maybe I would be able to get away with that.
Yeah, it's in your blood. It was not in mine.
You're like, get me back to the bar as quickly as possible.
Yeah, exactly. There's only so long I could drink the cask wine because you're in the middle of nowhere. There's nowhere, not much in the way of nightlife. And you know, definitely bogged a tractor a couple of times while I was there. And it feels like a bit of a dream now. But yeah, you have to do 88 days. So I ticked that off, got my second year visa, came back to Melbourne, worked at a couple of other places, started to decide that I really quite liked it here. And my very good friend Sarah was working at Bomba, which is where I still am. And she was sort of, because it was more of a restaurant vibe, it was easier for them to sponsor people than smaller cocktail bars for various legal reasons that we don't need to go into. And so I moved over there and had the, if anyone's interested, I can email them. Yeah. But we,
just make that another YouTube video. It's, you know, for certain watchers, exactly. Viewers only.
how to manage to embed yourself in Australia.
Yeah.
And so went there and had a slightly awkward conversation straight off the bat with the owner where I was like, hi, I want you to sponsor me. And he was like, you know, I don't know you at all. Let's get you in and have you working for a couple of months and see. But luckily, he decided it was worth the time and effort. And and then I've been there sort of ever since.
That's amazing.
Which is,
How many years at Bomba then?
7 years.
Wow.
This year. In March, so I guess coming up on 8 now. Again, which will potentially blow the minds of some people in the US and Australia. Obviously, we get lots of paid holiday anyway. But also, if you stay at a certain company for, in a lot of industries, it's 10 years. But because hospitality, they kind of understand that people do hop around a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The thing is 7 years. So if you stay at one place for 7 years, you get an extra 7 weeks paid holiday. So I got that this year, which
oh,
was quite exciting.
Oh my god. Oh.
Not
you
to,
did
not
warn
to
me
in,
that
but
my mind would be blown, but I was not expecting that at all. You are such a smart woman.
Yeah.
I believe you chose wisely. Wow, it sounds like
I think
you went
potentially
there.
One of the only people to that's kind of unlock that achievement.
Incredible. So you got there and it seems like since you've landed in Melbourne and been doing your cocktail thing, you've really established yourself as, and I know that the industry loves you. You've won all kinds of little awards. You know, you are of note. People take note of you everywhere you go. You've got the channel. You have all this stuff. How did all of that come about? Did it just sort of happen? Or did you at some point say, you know, I'm going to start a YouTube channel? You know, how did it all happen?
That opportunity was presented to me. It wasn't my idea. And mm-hmm. actually I was a little bit reticent to begin with, because believe it or not, I am slightly socially awkward. And I think the way that a lot of bartenders can be when you don't have that safety sort of, exactly. of the bar behind, you know, in front of you, or you're moving into a different
talking
sphere.
To a camera than talking to a person. You know, if there's a human in front
exactly.
of you,
and
you can connect on something and offer them the drink and all of that. But when you're talking to a camera, I do radio. So I talk to a microphone, and my consolation is there's no one around me. So I get over feeling stupid really quickly.
Just you and the microphone.
Exactly. But for you, you're doing it on camera and everything. So how were you approached? Like, who decided, you know what, she can do this?
So it was, which I'll always be really grateful for. It was actually one of the owners of Bomba. He had a friend that he'd known since high school who was a camera person. I'm not sure what the technical term is for it, but you know, that like works in production, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And he had been doing a few other things in the YouTube space, and he'd sort of hit on this idea of wanting to do a drinks channel, but he was not hospitality. So we went to Jesse, knowing that he owned a restaurant and would know people potentially. And so then Jesse put me in touch with Josh, and that was sort of the original partnership, where we kind of produced everything together. I think the reason that I kind of said yes initially was just actually having a look through what was available on YouTube at that point, and it was quite at the peak of that like bro bartending culture. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a lot of guys with beards telling you you're doing it wrong, you know. So
I was gonna say there really aren't many women doing it right even now. I feel like I don't really see too many women doing that creator thing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, definitely much more mm-hmm. now than there were. And I think on TikTok as well, there's more kind of younger women coming through, which, to be honest, I can't really speak to, because I'm the millennial that still, you know, sees TikTok videos on Instagram three weeks after they were cool. I think there's you know, there's a lot more, and just obviously more representation across the industry in general. But at that point, I did just feel like, you know, when I was starting out, I would have maybe preferred a female voice to sort of, and just trying to get away from all absolutes and all those, you know, you're an idiot if you drink something this way, or just trying to make it kind of fun and accessible. I decided to do that, and then it just did quite well, I think, during the pandemic, because obviously a lot of people jumped on and were creating content, and that was awesome. But I think because at that point we had a bit of a back catalogue, so you know, if people kind of stumbled on the channel when they were at home looking to make cocktails at home, which mm-hmm. everyone obviously did for a little while there, there was kind of a bit more for them to consume than people that had only sort of started doing it when the lockdown started hitting. Mm-hmm. So there was a pretty big spike at that point. And then it's just sort of continued to grow from there, which has been great. And then obviously, some other kind of opportunities have come out of there. But I do think is that, you know, when you were saying you're a person of note within the industry or whatever, like one thing that I'm really like upfront and clear about is I am not the best bartender you will ever meet. Like, I could name 5, 10, 15, 20 people off the top of my head that are better bartenders, and that's not false modesty. But I think for me, it was quite a nice way of actually combining, you know, the thing that I love, like hospitality, and then communication, because I've always been someone that enjoyed writing, enjoyed you know, was on the debate team in school and all of that kind of thing, and like bit of a geek basically. And so
I love that.
Very
much. I was an honors student. I know how it goes.
Yeah,
I was on speech and debate too, by the way.
Yeah.
But I did the speech side. I didn't do the debate side.
No, just telling people your opinion and not allowing anyone
yeah,
to argue
yeah,
with
totally. I would do, I'm only speaking. I'm reciting things. I would do that stuff, writing stories and all of that. But it sounds like you took your platform, like it, you were handed a platform and decided to run with it, and you've taken it and you're using it for good. You know, I really appreciate what you said about wanting to be kind of a different voice that was out there, because I do see that stereotypical kind of bombastic presentation. It's very over the top and very splashy and, you know, just kind of cartoonish sometimes and all of that. Yeah. And then as opposed to something
and
that
look,
is...
it can be hard because the YouTube algorithm does love that stuff. So it is absolutely hard to strike a balance sometimes. You know, you will see me pulling some really ridiculous faces on the thumbnails and things because you just have to, like, that's the...
The things you never thought you would have to learn, right?
Exactly.
All of this take you to writing the book? Like, you figured, I have all of this work behind me. You've done so much probably research just to put these videos together, because I've seen that you have like thematically grouped videos too, like here, bark utensils and technique and, you know, then like you were talking about bitters, you know, things like this. So did all of that lead you to, I could probably put this in a book? Or how did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, again, actually, I have Jesse to thank for that. He was just kind of randomly talking to a publisher in a way. He's just a bit of a social butterfly. So I don't know, ended up, and he's really lovely because he's quite proud of it. So he'll, you know, tell people about it. And I guess at some point he was speaking to someone who worked at Hardy Grant, who ended up publishing the book. So it was actually more so they sort of came to me and were like, this actually sounds like it could translate quite well. And for me, I was like, oh yeah, this will be easy because I've got all the scripts, so I'll basically just have to cobble it together. And was quite naive in the fact that YouTube scripts don't actually like translate very well into a book. So it's actually quite a lot more work than
a lot of
I,
rewriting, I'm sure.
Initially anticipated. But yeah, for sure, the bones were there of like knowing sort of how I wanted to structure it and all of that kind of thing. So there was there was a little bit of groundwork for what ended
and
up
what
happening.
Is the title of the book again? It's
Strong, Sweet and Bitter.
That's right, Strong, Sweet, Bitter. I knew bitter was in it. I knew strong was in it. Strong, Sweet and Bitter. That's wonderful. I love that. And I actually really like that for a women written book as well. It's, you know, it kind of makes me think of the sugar and spice and everything nice little rhyme.
Yeah, that's
but this
true,
kind of
actually
turns it a little bit. I like that. Well, you know, mm-hmm. this is also about music, so I have to ask you music questions. But mm-hmm. I have no idea if you even have a musical background or anything. We went at this just from scratch. I wanted to meet you and talk with you. So do you have a musical background? Have you played
Absolutely
an instrument?
Not.
Yes, you're like me. I didn't play anything either. I tried to play guitar and I failed miserably.
Yeah, look, my parents did buy me a guitar one Christmas when I was, you know, maybe 12 or something, and then paid for lessons for maybe a year, and I did absolutely no practice in between the lessons. The poor kind of like elder teenager that they were paying to come around and help me was quite frustrated, and eventually we decided it was best for all parties that we laid my musical career to rest.
So your parents thought you should be playing guitar. You didn't necessarily did. I think that's hilarious. It's so typical.
Well,
though
I think I like the idea of being like a guitar player, but I did not want to put in the work to be a guitar player.
Well, so that makes me think that you probably had a guitar player that you liked or something, like you had posters on the wall.
No, honestly, my posters on the wall were actually football players. but no, I definitely grew up with, you know, obviously I think when you're younger you're very influenced by your parents' music. Mm-hmm. And so my dad was very much of the, you know, the Beatles, the Eagles, the Kinks, like that kind of generation, some of which I still really enjoy. And yeah, I mean, I just feel like guitar players are cool, right? Like you can't not look cool while playing a guitar. So and I think every preteen person wants to be cool. So
yeah, that is
that
true.
Was sort of the thinking there.
Well, then you were like, I mean, you were outside of Glasgow, right? You weren't actually in Glasgow when you were growing up outside mm-hmm. of there, but that's a big music town. There's a lot of amazing Absolutely. Bands that came out of there. So there had to be some stuff that you were hearing when you were growing up, or even some local stuff that you were proud of, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Paolo Nutini, I still love. He's a great Glasgow-based sort of singer, songwriter, sort of bluesy, I suppose, and just has an amazing voice.
Who is that?
Paolo Nutini.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know who that is. Yeah, yeah. I absolutely know who that is. I always forget that he's Scottish. That's terrible of me, I know.
Well, I feel like once you remember, if you listen to it, you can, you know, I quite enjoy it because he does actually sing in a Scottish accent, as opposed to a lot of other Scottish bands that that sort of maybe put on a bit of a twang. I mean, for me, honestly, actually growing up, or like being a teenager, it was more the clubbing scene was very big in Glasgow. So, you know, I would go out probably 3-4 times a week in the big high heels and all of that I can't imagine how I managed to do it anymore.
I think about that all the time. I think about, like, I would break an ankle in 2 seconds in the stuff I used to wear out and dance on tables or whatever.
Exactly. And look, and I'm so glad, because I actually was back in Glasgow this year, and for old time's sake went to a club that I used to go to in my youth, and all the kids now are wearing trainers, and I'm like, yes, you know, you go. Girls,
they're so smart. They're so smart.
don't suffer like I did.
What kind of music was in there at the time? Because that's, you're right, I mean, clubs were really big out in Scotland too. So what was the music you were taking home from there?
So I've always had a pretty eclectic taste of music. There's honestly not very many styles that I would say that I just don't like. It was kind of fun in Glasgow because you would choose your venue, you know, based on what you were wanting to hear. So we had Bamboo, who was very much more kind of like R&B and hip hop. Sub Club was much more the kind of like dance, sort of house, techno vibe. We had the Arches back in the day, which was also a little bit more kind of like hardcore EDM and stuff, and a lot of fun parties were thrown there. There's actually like Mungo's Hi-Fi is another really fun one. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but it's
a club or a band?
No, it's a band.
Mungo's Hi-Fi.
Mungo's Hi-Fi. So Saint Mungo is the patron saint of Glasgow. They're called That's Mungo's awesome. Hi-Fi, and they were sort of like
I'm looking that
reggae
up.
Dub. they're great. They're really fun. And kind of a fluid group who would have different MCs and stuff every time that they perform and that kind of thing. But yeah, sort of like almost like reggae dub sort of vibes, and they were always really fun nights as well. Pretty spoiled for choice at that.
That's
at that
awesome.
Point.
That's so great. I love that then, that whole culture. It was such a fun time.
definitely. and you know, I guess before phones and things like that. So I think a little bit more free and you know, you were in, I guess everyone had their digital cameras that they uploaded albums of 60 photos of the same night every night.
It wasn't quite the same. I get what you're saying.
That was a very fun time. And then I think a big part of my musical sort of education actually happened in Canada. When I was working at when I was working at the Poorhouse, I guess it was quite interesting because obviously the service industry is such a sort of career in North America, that a lot of people I was working alongside were sort of in their 30s and 40s and all had really awesome taste in music, and so they introduced me actually to, interestingly enough, a Scottish sort of, I guess, that kind of more ambient electronic stuff, like Boards of Canada, Nicholas Jar, all of that kind of thing. So I went pretty deep down that rabbit hole for a while as well, which was really fun.
Well, that stuff is almost like
when I was back in
the mellower stuff of what you were already listening to in the clubs. You know, they turned you onto the Nicholas Jar and Boards of Canada.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
It's like the come down side.
Yeah, exactly. and did make me like, you know, at the end. So yeah, just at that point I sort of probably identified more as a an electronic music listener. And so when I was back, you know, made the point of doing Berghain, you know, doing the queue, getting past the bouncer, getting in. So that was a pretty iconic night in Berlin as well, wow, which was really fun. But I think again, as you know, there was probably an element of a little bit of self-consciousness at that point of wanting to be like cool, and now I'm just super happy to be like cheesy 80s pop with the peak of music, like, you know.
It's golden oldies now.
They don't listen to Bullet. Yeah, you know, they don't listen to Belinda Carlisle. I'm going to see Belinda Carlisle this year. Actually,
are you really?
I'm very excited about it.
It's so going to be a fun
I don't
show.
Know how old she is, but yeah.
I don't.
When Summer Rain comes on, it's going to pop off.
I'm thinking she's at late 50s or early 60s by now. I'm not sure. It's weird to think about that. But she still looks great. She has had all the plastic surgery because she lives in Los Angeles. So
I mean,
well, you're in Australia now. Yeah, I know, right? If it makes you happy, do it. That's my philosophy.
Yeah.
You're in Australia now, which is also a huge, huge music country. I mean, there's so many bands. The reason I visited Australia for the first time was because there were so many bands from there that I absolutely loved. So yeah. I'm just wondering if you've encountered that. And since you like the electronic stuff, you must like Cut Copy. Have you heard Cut Copy?
Cut Copy.
I was going to say.
Facilities. Yes.
Yeah. You have to like
all that good stuff. But yeah, I mean, what I actually love about Australia is the festival culture here. You know, I guess with the weather and everything being pretty good, it's massive. Like festival season just starts sort of about a month ago and goes right through till about April next year. And there's, you know, big ones, little ones, ones catering to every single, you know, style of music, ones that are more for, you know, people bringing their kids and kind of family stuff, and ones that are where people just go to get absolutely maggoted and everything in between. So that's pretty fun. So yeah, I've been to a few fun ones, and obviously what's great about that is generally you discover new music, because you know you maybe like a few acts in the lineup, and so you have to go there about, you know, a million other hours to fill while you're there, so you tend to discover some really, really fun stuff. So King Stingray is one that I saw at a festival.
That's an amazing
year.
Name.
it's a really good name. And they are you incorporate a lot of sort of Aboriginal, like they actually do some stuff in language and kind of like using didgeries and stuff, but like in a really like modern and fresh sound. So that's really awesome. Genesis Owusu was another like Ghanaian Australian that I saw, and he was just incredible, like so much stage presence, you know, like amazing costumes, like kind of like almost felt like, you know, Michael Jackson in his prime sort of vibe of just like the performance, which was really fun. I'm trying to think who else.
I always love to learn that. This is my favorite part, because these are bands I haven't heard of, and then I can go look it up and be like, oh, I know some new ones. Yes.
They're actually Kiwi, or from New Zealand. I'm having Fat Freddy's Drop.
That's what they're called.
Kind of like reggae vibes. Yeah.
I was gonna say
in the bar, like, you were describing Sunday afternoons.
Mm-hmm. When you were describing Mungo Hi-Fi, I was thinking of them. The way you were describing them made me think of Fat Freddy's Drop.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a bit of an overlap there. So yeah, that's probably my main form of music consumption nowadays is sort
that's
of
just, awesome. Yeah, that's so much fun. I mean, plus it's a great community experience too. And that's something that obviously you've been in hospitality for a long time, and it sounds like, you know, what kind of pulled you into that was that community, like the community behind the scenes, as well as the community of you being a bartender and talking to a customer, you know, and creating
absolutely.
That.
And I don't think any stories will ever bond you quite like when you've been at a 3-day festival with a group of people.
We have Coachella out here, and I've only been to Coachella twice, and I swore I would never go because I'm like, it's too huge. And the first time I went, I had a very specific reason for going. I had an amazing time, great group of people. Still remember so many things from that, and it was ages ago. It was like 2004. Then I went again maybe about 4 years later, and it was a terrible experience. I have so many memories from that, and these stories are still told, you know, like a decade later, we're still telling these stories about what happened, the bands we saw, all that. So it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's definitely something. And it wasn't that friendships were lost during it or anything like that. There might have been some arguments. There could have been some things that went down, but we all survived, you know. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Like, and I guess it's a pressure box situation for sure. Yes.
And same in a bar and at a restaurant. You definitely have those, you know, you always hear about people going into the walk-in to cry or scream.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you a question that is music and booze related. I don't know if you've had the opportunity, because I know you've been at Bomba for a long time, and I'm not sure what kind of hand you've had in creating cocktails there. Have you been had the opportunity to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm the manager, like that was very much my job for quite a while, and then I guess I've been trying to hire myself out of a job for a little bit while I kind of started doing some other things. So now very much passed on to a couple of talented, Jordan and Ryan, that are sort of do all the hard work now, and I just take the glory. But everything's still so.
Well, I know it's collaborative because it comes still through a bar. Well, what I always wonder is if sometimes any musical things sneak into the cocktails, because sometimes it could just be a song is obsessing you with you, or maybe an artist passed away and you were like, oh, we need to have a Prince cocktail, or you know, just something. If that you remember if any of that ever crossed your path while you were doing this. It's okay if it didn't. It doesn't for everyone, but sometimes it happens.
No, I mean, I think with like naming cocktails, song lyrics can be super useful. I definitely had one. I've had an autumn sweater on, you know, aww, for the Yola Tango.
Like,
which is, you know, I think just that, like, I can't remember what it was now, but sort of, like autumnal sort of, you know, fig and whiskey or that kind of thing that just feels like a nice warm hug.
Warm sweater,
yeah, exactly. We've definitely had a Purple Rain cocktail on, but I think basically every bar in the world has
one. Hey, when, you know, he gave us a great title.
Bramble type.
gave us something to work with.
Because I'm pretty bad at naming drinks. I tend to go a bit too esoteric, I think. So trying to just find like a nice snappy, you know, combination of words from someone that has poured their heart out into something is quite a good little shortcut for it sometimes.
True. Now, how about for yourself when you're home? You know, a lot of people who work in the industry, when they get home, they're just drinking water or maybe sipping on a beer. But when you're home, when you have some downtime, do you have a drink and listen to some music on your own? Is that your chill, or do you have something else that you do?
Definitely. We've got a record player, which I really enjoy using, because, you know, just that thing of actually listening to a whole album, that feels really luxurious to
it
me
does.
Nowadays, but in the world of Spotify and, you know, at the bar, we obviously have playlists and things like that where it's not all one artist. So I think that's a real marking of like actually having an afternoon free, is if you have time to like, sit down, pour yourself like a glass of wine and put on a full album.
It's true. For sure. So it is kind of luxurious, isn't it?
Yeah.
It used to be regular.
but no, so yeah, my fiance is like a little bit older than me. So he's definitely of the vintage that he grew up listening to records and things in his house and stuff like that. So yeah, that's a good quality time thing for us. We, you know, have a nice bottle of wine, have the record on, do a crossword, and that's a pretty perfect Sunday afternoon for us.
Lovely.
Cook some dinner.
What's the most recent album you remember putting on?
I'm trying to think what the last one we would have actually listened to. I think the last one I listened to myself was Massive Attack.
Ooh.
I always forget. I'm really bad the names of it, but it's the one with the big like diamond on the front
that's kind of brown,
like, I don't know,
that's like the first one. One Safe From Harm, I think, is the name of the album.
I think so,
at least that's the name of one of the songs on it. That's their first album.
I was
just listening to the song Safe From Harm very recently for some reason. That very soulful,
such a banger.
So beautiful. She's just so,
it is.
You just listen to it and you're like, who can sing like this?
Well, I always say my, almost my sort of, general, because I'm pretty flip-floppy around all kinds of genres and things, but one thing that I will basically always enjoy is a dreamy lady vocal, you know, like when there's that kind of like a haunting lady vocal, whether it's on a dance track, whether it's on in jazz, whether it's, you know,
That really indie. Makes sense too, considering you like the club, or you've had a past with all the club music, because I loved all that too. But I always joke, like, there's always the woman going, oh, you know, in there somewhere.
I like so, yeah, growing up is just finding different forms of that.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm going to steal Dreamy Lady vocal because it's so perfect. It makes so much sense. I love that. I also think you have to have a drink that you name the Dreamy Lady or something at some point.
That's true. Yeah, I should actually.
I'm sure you can come up with something. So, okay, well, that is wonderful. I love all of this. Thank you so much. I think maybe remind people, like, where can they find you? You have so many places where people can find you on the YouTube, on the social, your book, all that kind of stuff. We would rattle it all off so people can find you if they want to.
Quick fire. So YouTube is Behind the Bar with Cara Devine. Instagram is at with Cara Devine. The book is called Strong, Sweet and Bitter and is available in the States. So from all reputable
I've looked it up. We can find
I don't actually know.
But reputable and not. Just
get it over there.
Yeah, get it. Just we can get it.
and then the bar that I work at is at Bomba Bar.
Bomba Bar. So if anyone's in
the new bar does not yet have Instagram, but it will be on my with Cara Devine website.
So follow with Cara Devine, and then you can find out about the new one when it's ready. But if you're if someone finds themselves in Melbourne, then they should pop by and see if you are around at Bomba.
Yes,
exactly. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate talking with you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
So there you have all the socials. I don't think I need to repeat them. And remember to find the book, Strong, Sweet, and Bitter by Cara Devine. It was so lovely to talk with her. I'm so glad that she was able to jump online and do this for us. And I'm hoping, I'll post in the comments, that we have a nice clubby playlist for you as well. At least somewhere Dreamy Lady vocals, of which I am also a huge fan. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks so much to Cara. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.